Welcome, pilgrims and pilgrimettes, to the El Camino de Santiago Pilgrims Podcast, where we talk all things El Camino de Santiago, tips, tricks, and hacks to make your Camino a little bit easier. I'm your host, Andrew Baker, and joining me today is Japanese-Italian pilgrim Luca Nuoi.
Welcome, Luca Nuoi from Barcelona. Thank you so much for joining us. For those of you who don't know, Luca is actually another member of my Camino family. He walked with me on the Camino Frances in 2019 in that very warm summer from July to August. Thanks for joining me, Luca.
Hey, Andrew. Thanks for having me. Do you usually talk to people who you've walked with on the trip, or how does it work?
No, since I've taken over this thing, I've been contacted by a lot of people who I haven't walked with, a lot of people who are just interested in, but I feel like it's just starting off just to get some legs underneath this thing. It'd be good to just start off with some Camino family members, and you and I, we had such a great relationship on the Camino.
Definitely. Yeah, absolutely.
There were a lot of things.
I'm going to have to pretend like you don't know some of this stuff, right? I know the stuff that you've seen, so I got to be specific, I guess.
No, I want to dig in.
I got to not make reference inside jokes and stuff like that then, yeah?
Well, you know, if you just want to create some context to whatever you're referencing, gotcha. That's totally fine. Cool. So Luca's in Barcelona. He walked the Camino Frances. I want to say I met Luca, or I sat right next to him in Zubiri, and that was the first time we chatted it up.
Yeah, that's right. It was at the river, right?
Yeah, it was underneath that medieval bridge.
That was a fun time. It was right after the, the Pyrenees, no?
That is correct.
We went down the, that was crazy. That's when it dawned on me that, wow, this is going to be a long walk.
So, Luca, Barcelona is not that far of a trek from Saint-Jean-Pierre-de-Port.
Right.
How did you end up there?
I took the train, and then I took the bus, and I got there. It was all decided within a matter of 2 days or something.
Okay, so
I got 35 days or something. I just quit my job, and I had I wanted to take some time off, and I was like, what can I do in a month and a half? And a friend who's done the walk said, you got to do the Camino. So, 2 days later, I was on the train to Pamplona, then took the bus to Saint-Jean-Pierre-de-Port.
So, aside from just the logistical aspect,
yeah,
how did you get into the Camino? How did you hear of it? Was it just from your friend? What gave you the... push to decide to, because people don't just commit to a month-long pilgrimage on a whim.
No, yeah, that's the thing. It was a little bit of a whim for me. But I don't know. It was, ultimately, I realized it was deeper than that. But something inside me went, this is exactly what I need to do now. And I heard about the Camino through close friends who's done it. And there's been three or four that, it was inside me, I was thinking, okay, it's time, they're all telling me to do it. This is something I should do one day. And then, and when this moment came, I was like, that's it. This is what I got to do.
So we met in Zubiri. At what point along the Camino that did it hit you that this is something deeper? This is something a little more special than just a good way to kill 30 days.
The walk around the corner. Yeah. That interesting question. I don't know. I did go with this expectation of it being something is deeply meaningful. You know what I mean? So I had that idea in my head from the beginning, but when I really felt that was probably when there's been some incredible moments, having a lot of basically fun the first few weeks. And then when we hit that, was it Meseta? The plain where there's nothing.
Right after Burgos.
7 days, yeah. I was like, wow. That was when I think it felt like, yeah, this is way more than, what I had pictured in my head. Ultimately, it was very different, too. It's very personal. It's very intense. That Meseta, man, that was... Wow,
So, remember that. So what was so intense and personal for you?
Well, there's that. I mean, there's like a drastic contrast in the scenery, right? And suddenly, like you go through all these like very diverse terrain, basically the first few days, and then you're in the woods again, and then like I don't know, there's like a magnesium factory, and boom, there's like a lot of kind of attractions. You're still new to it, and then it's sort of the pace kind of slows down, and then you look around and you're in an oven. And there's nothing. There's like haystacks everywhere, and this goes on forever. And you find yourself there, like, whoa. You know, it's like almost like I don't know, like almost like a stage in life kind of thing. You know, like boom, oh shit, I find myself in this place, and it's different. I don't know. That had like a lot of deep sort of connections to. What am I trying to say here? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I completely get it. I feel like the Meseta has this aura to it that it really, for me, it tested my mind.
Yeah, definitely. Exactly, yeah.
And that's challenge. Kind of a cliche on the Camino. They say mm-hmm. the first third tests your body, and then the Meseta, the middle part, tests your mind, and then they say the last third tests your soul.
Right, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
So, speaking of testing your body,
yeah,
tell me about that first couple of days over the Pyrenees, that epic hike over the Pyrenees. What did you find difficult about that?
The first hike. Well, I don't know. That was like I was speeding through it, and I definitely underestimated the impact it would have on me physically. Totally. And then, like, 2 days later or something, it really hit me. But those first few weeks, I was just cruising through. I was, like, you know, I was on this kind of high, you know? Like, I'm starting this thing and walked way more than I should. And then I suffered for the next week or two, really.
And?
In the physical phase, yeah. No, I had that. What are they called? Ampollas. What was it again? Blisters all over my feet. I mean, all over my feet. I had a what else did I have? I had like rash. Everything. You know, you name it. Like it was all like knees were given up. And I had a boil right on the on the crack of my bottom. Should I say? I can't use profanity on this show.
That's something that my back, a lot of pilgrims don't endure.
Right, yeah, that's that was
So was that something that caused from the Camino?
What's that?
Was that caused from walking?
Oh, absolutely. It was from like a heat rash, basically. It got really bad, and then it got infected, and it turned into this big
Did you see a doctor?
Tumor-looking thing. Yeah, I did, actually. I went to the emergency room. And I waited for like 3 hours on the chair, lying horizontally, and like practically, like I was definitely shrieking in pain at that moment. I couldn't sit, basically. I went into the emergency room, and these two very young doctors, we were like chit-chatting. It was funny seeing us. We came in, like, hey, how's it going? Like, cool vibes. Okay. Then like they cut the boil off my butt, basically. And then it's done, and they're like talking about the Camino. Yeah, have a nice day, guys. And I left.
You get this boil. What town were you in when you saw this doctor? What town?
It was a big. It was a big city. It was where the birthday party was happening.
Oh yeah, he's speaking of Christopher, who was known as a lollipop man, in Brad's earlier episodes.
Yes. He's known as the lollipop man.
Oh, well, on the Camino, that year he was.
Sure, he was, definitely.
We were in Burgos.
Cool. I didn't know he earned that moniker during the walk.
He was the one carrying the Chupa Chups.
Totally. Of course, I remember that.
Speaking of carrying, what kind of gear did you use? I mean, did you have all this backpacking gear prior? Do you have any experience backpacking or going on long through hikes?
A little bit. I mean, definitely. So I've traveled that kind of sense of backpacking. So I had the backpack, and then I've done, maybe max like 3 days hiking. So I didn't have much experience in that regard. So yeah, what did I buy? I kept my shoes because I was really worried about blisters, which I ended up getting, obviously. But it wasn't. It lasted till me the end. They were shoes that I wore in the city, and I bought these gel insoles, and I just put them in and walked with them. And it worked. It's just fine.
So gel inserts that helped you out. At least it helped the comfort part.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was definitely comforting.
So you had the backpack and you had the shoes.
Yeah.
Obviously, socks are a huge part of it. What was another absolutely critical piece of equipment for you?
What really helped me was having knee pads. You know what I'm talking about?
Knee sleeves or knee braces?
Knee sleeves. Yeah, knee braces. One of those. Those helped a lot. But I got them. Did I? I think I did bring them. Yeah. And I ultimately did end up using them, and it helped me a lot with my knees.
Let me ask you this. Did you use trekking poles at all?
I did. I did buy two of them at this beautiful place with a view earlier on. Where was that? I think it was near that wine city, you know, where like there was supposed to be like a tap that, where wine comes out. It never did.
Oh, yes. Oh, what was that?
Have you tried it? Like, nothing
happened. Yes. You know when I is the Irache.
Oh wow, that's incredible.
Excuse my butchering.
That's incredible memory. A terrible pronunciation, but the memory is incredible.
but yeah, I mean when I walked there, I wasn't able to get the wine because it was so early in the morning.
Oh, that's how it works.
Yeah, I guess they filled it up earlier in the day.
Darn it.
Yeah, so
I was late in the night. That's why. Yeah, so somewhere around there, I got the sticks, and it did help me. Like someone, there's like a math that I heard, which was like it reduces impact to your knees by 8% or something. I don't know. There's like a specific number going around. It's kind of funny.
Improves your walking efficiency by 30% or something.
Yeah, 31.9%. Yeah, and it did help me out. It was nice.
Good.
It was kind of fun too. You know, it's fun to walk with sticks. You know, not gonna lie.
You know, one of the things I found, I use trekking poles myself, and I found
the real ones, right? Like you had those legit ones, like
I bought mine in St. John.
You did? Okay.
Yeah, well, I bought mine in St. John.
Wooden sticks that they sold at a little store.
So you didn't have the traditional trekking poles. You had old pilgrim wooden sticks.
Yeah, a pair of wooden, big wooden sticks, like two massive chopsticks. And as a Japanese man, that was kind of a funny sight. And I tossed them at the end in Mushia, actually, into the ocean.
You did?
It was wood. So, you know. It kind of felt like the right gesture at that moment, basically. I don't know.
So you made the trek from St. John all the way to Mushia.
That's
Did you also go to Finisterre?
I did not. I had to kind of pick between Mushia and Finisterre in the end because of timings, and I decided to go to Mushia.
So I want to get to that part. Sure. We can go back to talking about equipment.
Get to that part. That was an amazing part, man.
Yeah, because I haven't talked to a pilgrim who has made the walk to Mushia from Santiago de Compostela.
Really?
I really haven't, you believe it or not. And really, the only this sounds bad. The only knowledge I have of that journey is a couple of shots from the Martin Sheen movie, The Way.
They go to Mushia in the end?
Yeah, they make it all the way to that little church that's like right by the water's edge.
I didn't know.
Yeah, so talk about that last. It's a 3-day walk from Santiago to Compostela, right?
Yeah, that was amazing because it was like we got to Santiago and we're like, wow, we made it, and boom, and there's like, you know, bagpipes playing and, you know, this like aura of joy. And then, wow, I mean, it was a beautiful, beautiful day. I mean, we were all in tears. It was incredible. And then we wined and dined the next few days. I had some chill moments, fun times. And then this kind of communal aspect sort of came to an end, basically, in terms, you know, like within the chapters of Camino. And the last 3 days.
That's where we parted ways.
What's that? Yeah, we reparted ways. Yeah. We went our own ways. So within your own journey as in the Camino, all along you've been walking with people. And after this point, yes, you could walk to Mishia or Finisterre with people, but around me, at least, like a lot of people who did go decided to go on their own. And I felt right for me too. So the last 3 days, I really mostly just spent time with myself. And it was a time to really reflect on the whole walk quietly. And I was reading writing a tiny little, you know, like a small tiny diary, a little bit per day, every day. And I read all that during this time and sort of, I don't know, it went through everything. And it was great. Like at one point, I remember there was this point, the scenery was just incredible, incredible. There's all that Galicia, the green, rich forest. And then suddenly like this open, like, I don't know, like moss fields. And then there's like moss for acres. And there's like a little hill and there's no one there. So I went up this hill and at the very top, like nobody was around. And I remember I put my speaker on, what is that? Moby. You know that song? The Moby song.
Yeah.
What is that song?
Oh, you're the music
in my
expert.
Heart. In my heart. Yeah, put that on and I was singing it from the top of my lungs. It was incredible.
Just on the Camino alone.
That was
singing out loud yourself.
There was it was like in this open place with a little hill, nobody around. And didn't experience that at all during the whole time I was walking. And so it was a very different sort of, it was like the last, basically an epilogue, right? Kind of thing. Like to
an epilogue, it absolutely is. Like,
isn't that what they call it too, actually?
Yeah.
That's what I've seen, actually, epilogue or something like the words.
So you...
Huh. Yeah, so that's...
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, that was a different time. It was a very different experience.
So you mentioned you were alone, and there weren't many pilgrims. What was
the... No, there were pilgrims, yeah.
Were there
pilgrims
still
on the way?
Still
but,
okay.
Yeah, but there wasn't this sort of like, you know, you go to a place, you sit down, you eat, and then you might speak to somebody, oh, hi, and then you go to sleep. You know, it was like that kind of thing. There were other pilgrims around, but I mostly kept it to myself. And some people I spoke to also sort of did that. It was that kind of mood a little bit on those last 3 days. And I remember the last 3 days, like the first day, my physical pain came back. And then you know, it was kind of tough for me. Suddenly, like I had all this pain because I was on this like kind of on the run, right? Basically for all these days, and you get to Santiago and I was there for like 5 days. And then I, basically haven't walked like that 5 days. So I had this physical stuff. And the second day I had a lot of like negative thoughts in my head. So it was like this kind of mental challenge, right? And the last day was just spiritual, soulful day. And so it was like all the Camino condensed into 3 days.
That's interesting. You kind of like revisited each phase.
Absolutely,
that
yeah. It was really, it felt really deep. And at the end, it was beautiful. I mean, the sunset in Mishia. Mishia is a really nice, beautiful little town. Tiny place. It feels like a Pokemon village, you know, that kind of stuff. But very small. There's all these different areas you can go to. And wow. And when you see the ocean, the first time during the walk, it was powerful. Did you walk to Finisterre? I forgot.
No, I took the bus there. I was short on time. Had to catch a flight back to out of Madrid. I want to stay with this journey. Sure. You mentioned there were less pilgrims. What were the facilities? What was the infrastructure like on the way to Mishia? Was it like as solid, as available as it was the rest of the Frances?
Yeah, I remember I stayed in this like kind of farm thing. It was like a place with a bunch of animals. Like there were some llamas and wild boars. It's a funny place. And yeah, and then these like basically kind of like lodge, like what is it? Not bungalows or like lodges kind of thing. In this, I don't know, like a farm looking place. And that was fun. That was beautiful. Like there was very few pilgrims staying there, and it was a big, beautiful dormitory, and they're barely filled. So yeah, it was available. I mean, there were stuff there. I mean, there basically there isn't a whole lot of people. So if you do find one, it's not going to be full. At least that was my experience.
And what about Moshia when you arrived there? Or what
Yeah.
was
Oh, that was a
the
bit more
pilgrim
full.
scene there?
That was actually there was a lot of people there, because I guess some people the Moshi itself I think it seemed like it did have tourism on its own, and some people have taken the other ways and stuff like that. And then I don't know, it did feel very lively, Moshi. Restaurants were full at night. Yeah.
So let's bounce back to some of
Sure.
the logistics and gear questions
Okay, that's good.
regarding
Question number
the
two.
Camino. Yeah, gear question number two.
Are you gonna plug a product in soon, or is it drumming up to that?
I am not
Okay.
sponsored or receiving
Gotcha. Gotcha. Knee
any
pads.
kinds of equipment.
Okay.
No, this is solely for the good of the pilgrim.
Yeah,
Solely so
I'm
that they can benefit on
totally.
their own community.
Messing with you, Andrew, I know.
So let me ask you this. On your Camino, was there something you wished you would have brought with you?
Something I wish I brought in with me that I didn't brought in with me, right?
Yeah,
Let's think.
exactly.
Yeah, I thought about this the other day because you mentioned that, some of the like a question that you struggled to answer and stuff like that. And I also kind of felt like that. Yeah, like what would it be? I don't know. I haven't really thought of anything since. Don't know.
It's okay if you don't have
A dog. No,
a
no.
dog.
Maybe not. A squirrel.
So let me ask you this. What is something that you brought that perhaps you wish you would have left behind?
Something I regretted bringing.
Yes.
Oh, actually, hold on. I know what I should have brought. I
Okay.
remember. It was something warmer to wear. It was very simple, but I didn't anticipate actually how cold it would be. It was August. Well, some places were chilly, right? In Gracia and Pyrenees and stuff like that. So yeah, I didn't. I had a very, very, very flimsy jacket, and that's it. And it was a bit cold at times.
Yeah, I do remember you wearing a lot of button-up shirts, very loose-fitting button-up shirts on the Camino.
Oh yeah, I did. Yeah, like kind of pajama style button-up shirts. Maybe they're comfortable. Yeah, I didn't buy a lot of things. That's the thing. Like I tried to because it was like, okay, I'm gonna go in 2 days. I didn't want to suddenly, I didn't feel comfortable buying a lot of new clothes, for example, because I had, I bought knee pads. I bought these gels, and a few other things. But I was like, okay, I'm gonna get stuff as I go. But when it gets super cold in the Pyrenees, that th there isn't an there's a store in the middle of the place, so
Yeah.
it's something that yeah I should have prepared better. What did I regret bringing? I don't know. I didn't bring much, so nothing. Sorry for the boring answer.
No, you're totally fine. Let's maybe adjust the question.
Sure, adjust it.
You mentioned that at the end of Mushia, or at the end in Mushia, you
Yep.
tossed your trekking poles into
Yep.
the ocean.
Yes.
Was there anything else you left on the Camino? What's the old tradition of getting to the ocean and burning your clothes, the old medieval pilgrim tradition?
Oh yeah, no, I guess that the wooden sticks were my equivalent of whatever that is. I don't know. felt like, yeah, I did it, and then sort of shedding something with you, because like I wasn't gonna use the sticks at home anyways, and I don't know, it just felt like a right gesture at that moment. I know it's biodegradable material. I wasn't, you know, it was like plastic sticks, so it was like, okay, I'm gonna put this back where it belongs. But it was a symbol, most more likely. It was like a companion during my Camino that kind of helped me out. And it's like, you know, you stay with the Camino kind of thing. It wasn't like a get away from me, you know?
So let's move on to some other, I feel like, are some easier answers.
Oh, okay.
Did you have a favorite town or city along the Camino Frances?
Oh my God, there are so many beautiful little places. There's one that I really remember clearly. Now that I think about it, I don't know what was so special about it, but it was in Galicia. Towards the end, right? I think it was, oh no, we not just got into Galicia, I think. And it was like a little town on the hillside. Basically, it was somewhere up in the mountains a little bit, and there's always like town kind of sprawling, it's like maybe like 10 blocks or something, but it's this neat, beautiful place, really green, and I remember there was a sunset there. I stayed at the albergue, which was in the church, in the church precinct, and I was there with, have you guys talked about Veer on this show?
Oh, we haven't mentioned Veer, but...
Oh, okay. Veer was a great guy. Yeah, Veer is an amazing guy. I think you should have him on the show. So I'll let him describe himself, should he have the opportunity. But he's a dude from Malaysia who lives in Taiwan. He's a practicing Buddhist monk. And definitely was... definitely somebody who has, let's say, accelerated the spiritual touch of the whole experience. Yeah, great guy. Anyways, yeah, he was there and a few other folks, and we were playing music outside, I remember, and the sun was coming in, and this is when it was, you know, that the whole so-called spiritual time, right? And the fact that it was in the church has nothing to do with it, by the way, at least for me. But it was this kind of, I don't know, old like stone architecture in the woods, very mossy, very very wet place. You know, you could see like through the sun rays, there's like vapor in the air a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, stunning, beautiful place.
It wouldn't have to be O Sobrero, was it? Would it?
No, it wasn't that one.
Okay.
It wasn't that one. It was after or before that. It's a minor place, you know, like on the Camino map, there would be a small dot, not a big dot. Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely.
You know what I'm talking about?
the small dots you may find in albergue or two.
Exactly, but that's sometimes the magic happens in the small dots, man. Oh, you know, I've really learned that on the trip, right? There's some, you know, and to people who, I guess everyone's aware of what that is. Right, like I don't know if you've talked about Camino maps in your show.
No, well, you know what? You bring up a good subject. Camino maps. Did you use one?
I did use one, and there's like it comes in many forms. And some, I mean, there's so many different, I guess, brands of Camino maps. But I think I had the one that they have at the registry Camino office in Saint-Jean Pierre de Port. I was like Ministry of Tourism, something like that. I don't remember. It's like a Camino institution, I think. And they give you a stamp and this, and I had the, and I grabbed something there. And basically it kind of fans out. It was like a folded pamphlet. And then you get all these, like you get the whole line, and it shows the altitude of each of the places, as well as, the little towns and what they have. Like there could be like a restaurant symbol and a lodge symbol or something like that for lodging for albergues. It was like a little nice little I don't know, it added a nice touch to it. It definitely made it look adventurous, and you see all this, you know, all these left and then so the small dots and big dots were basically like it denotes like bigger places are, but at least my one, you know, just like Logroño, then, you know, is that the name of the place, right?
Yeah,
Logroño and blah, 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 and like all those bigger places. And there's tiny little ones that like in between places. And then it has like an oddly long name that you can't pronounce it. And it's in Galicia. And it has like one hotel icon or something. You're like, oh, you're going to skip through that probably. Just let's make it to the big one. But the times where I did stop at these places, once in Miseta, actually, in the field, there was this place that wasn't even on the map, but like basically in the middle of nowhere, there was an albergue. It's like an oasis, actually. It was funny because the place kind of resembles a desert, right? With all these, it looks barren, but there's really wheat and stuff like that, I guess. But it's just this kind of golden yellow scenery forever. And then there's this one patch of like dense trees, and there's an albergue in there. So I stayed there, and that was kind of very interesting experience too, actually.
So, yeah. You mentioned this map. Did you stick to the stages on it?
Because I feel like really, okay. No. I think I adjusted. You're talking about like this, and this for a stage, and these like groupings of towns to go through.
I feel like a lot of the guidebooks or the maps still give you a recommended stage. Like day one, you're gonna walk from Saint Jean to Roncesvalles. Day two to Zabiri. Day three to Pamplona. At least that's what I did.
Totally. And yeah.
Did you have a map like that kind of guided you, or did you decide I want to stop here today?
I did read those stuff on the map a little bit, but I was more, I guess, following. The company that I was walking with, which like you were in, and we were walking in a certain pace. I was following that more than necessarily. What was in the guidebook, which may happen to be the first few weeks pretty much online, in line with what it says in the map. But towards the end, I didn't really think about that. I mean, it was just like, I think you kind of get this intuitive, you know, like you could kind of look at the map and like, okay, I'm going to do like 20, 30, I feel like 25 kilometers today, which means, oh, there's a place here. Okay, that's 26 kilometers. Sure, I can do that. I'll go to this place. And no longer following the stages.
So I want to get back to these logistics and favorites kind of questions.
Sure.
You mentioned some of these small town albergues. Did you have a favorite albergue?
Ooh, yeah. Let me see. Oh, yeah. There's one that I just remembered. Again, I think this was like a week before Santiago, maybe week and a half. It was this place where it was like this eco organic albergue thing where you there's like this big garden and like a building that apparently they built by themselves, like a two-story wooden house. And they do yoga classes and stuff like that. It's like a community as well, and people are living there. You know what I'm talking about? I know you weren't there. You went to this other place, and some of us were staying at this one.
I think I remember the one you're talking about. It's in Hospital de Orbigo.
Yes, that's it. Yes, it was in Orbigo.
Okay.
At least in that area. Either after or before, because I don't know if Orbigo is the one where you went. Did you stay at Orbigo?
I didn't. I passed through and I
you did. Okay, then that then Orbigo is the one where we stayed.
Yes, that was a day where I decided to I wanted to keep walking and.
Right.
There's quite a big group.
Lollipop Man as well, I think. Right.
No, Chris stayed there. He stayed there that day. Orbigo. He was looking for a good vegan meal. I remember that.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay. So we didn't stay in the same one then, I suppose. I forgot it was me and Veer was there as well. And yeah, there was like a community of people, Camino walkers and stuff like that, kind of living there and volunteering there and stuff as well. Like a bohemian vibes, you know, for lack of a better word. But I really, that was great. I mean, it had a very special energy there, I have to say. It was great. It was I highly recommend that place, actually. I forgot what it's called. Yeah, because I was looking for the diary, and I couldn't find it, actually, today. So I was going to refresh my memory, then I couldn't find this. Somewhere there's like this thing where I put my map, my diary, my everything. And I need to couldn't find it.
Hopefully you find it. Last but not least, did you have a favorite meal?
Favorite meal. It was in Mushia.
Mushia. Okay. You got to describe it to us. Where was it? What did you have?
I had these, what are they called? They call it Navas. Navajas. Razor clams. Razor sharp clams.
So how do you say it again?
It's a delicacy there. Navajas.
Navajas.
One navaja, two navajas.
They're razor sharp clams.
Yeah, razor clams, whatever. It's like basically this thin, like, kind of long clams. And they just, I don't know, saute it with butter and garlic and some herbs and stuff like that. And you pour lemon over it. And it's incredible. It's so good. Wow, and that was one of the magic in Mushia for me, because, you know, obviously, I love food. And so, and for a while, obviously, Camino is not about food. So, you know, like, that's not what it's definitely, if one isn't a reason, it's food.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Doesn't mean you can't find great food on the Camino.
There's great food everywhere, but also.
Eat a lot of French fries.
Totally. You're going to eat a lot of French fries. You're going to eat. There is a lot of, in the Miseta, like 7 towns in a row. I swear to God, I don't know if it's a chain. It's definitely not a chain. So local stores, local restaurants. But it was almost like a chain. I was joking because they had the same menu.
Frozen paella.
Salad.
Microwave with the Russian salad.
Russian salad or salad. And it's usually just like tomatoes, lettuce, and onions. Like put on a plate together. It's not even tossed, and it's not seasoned. It's just put on the plate together. And you know, I'm not dissing that or anything. That's part of the experience. But you know, it's obviously not a you're not gonna Instagram that on your food blog, you know?
Exactly.
Literally. You know. Not that I have one, but in Galicia, it was different. When you get there, suddenly the place has like a food culture, like seafood culture, and like very rich cuisine in general. So you're treated with all these. And the culmination of this was Mushia for me. They had very fresh seafood. In some places there, it was cheaper than what you would expect in a touristic place. So for like Santiago, the prices were obviously higher for nice restaurants. Mushia too had that side, and then you just walk into a bit of the localer side of town, and then you find restaurants as good or probably better. They might have, you know, white neon lights in there. It doesn't look like a nice restaurant, but they have great seafood, man. Wow. That was absolutely the top food moment.
So this is a question I haven't asked anyone yet, but I just know that you'll have a decent answer.
Drum roll.
What town or city did you, let's call it, enjoy the evening life? Let's call it that, because there's no real nightlife when you're a pilgrim, because you can't stay out late or else you'll be locked out of your albergue most nights.
Yeah.
But where did you have the most fun at nighttime?
I don't know. I didn't really... I didn't nightlife so much on the Camino in general. So, I mean, for example, like a fun night was definitely the birthday shindig at, it was in Logroño.
Burgos.
It was in Burgos, yeah, exactly. Where it had to be operated. That was a very fun night, for example. But that's not necessarily because we were, you know, we weren't out. We were actually at an Airbnb, I think, that Chris had rented.
Uh-huh.
Or some of you guys together. I don't recall exactly. Yeah. Yeah. In terms of club and stuff like that, I didn't go out.
Well, maybe just like the pincho scene, having a few extra
Sure.
beers or glasses of wine.
Gotcha. then I would say that, was it Pamplona? That kind of grungy city, right? Pamplona had that side.
Yeah, no, it definitely has.
Yeah, that's, I think Pamplona, I liked that. I think we were out drinking, having beers in this, on in these local bars and stuff like that. And it was, I don't know. It had this like heavily graffitied area, right? And then there were all these like kind of anarchist tradition and stuff there. So there were these kind of grungy vibing bars there. And I don't know. It seemed like the town had this culture, and it certainly had at least a vibe, like a night vibe to the place. Because like, you know, sometimes like you're in the community and the whole thing does feel spiritual and very sort of distance from the, you know, the life in the city and stuff like that. So I wasn't really feeling that. There were definitely fun times drinking together with everyone. But that was the main thing, right? Not necessarily the nightlife, let's say. So yeah, I don't know. Maybe I should do a second one, the party edition, where every town, every single town, 36 nights in a row, I'm going to party as hard as I can. That'll be a funny challenge.
I will say there, the saying, no vino, no Camino, it stood true with me, because I feel like...
Oh, yeah, we did drink a lot, yeah.
There was, this with our group, did. It was like a bottle of wine a day.
That did happen, yes. That did also happen. In the first time, I guess, few weeks, first 10 days, I guess. It was like we're forgetting our physical pain with the vinos. great time, but it did take. I did get a little tired of it, and I think everybody did. And we're talking about this with you as well. How we're saying that, like, it's like the first 10 days you're like in your 20s or something, you're just partying and blah blah blah, and like, or your teens are just, you know, like, wah, and then you calm down, you kind of settle down into the miseta, you know, for the next 10 days.
Yeah,
so we kind of shed away that period for a little bit, right? And then kept drinking, but in a different style.
I did often feel like the Camino had this trajectory that was almost totally. Like a lifetime.
Absolutely, yeah.
Where the first couple days, you're like an infant. You're just helpless. Yes. You don't know what to do. You're just trying to stumble from one town to the next.
Yep.
And then maybe you get to Pamplona, you're an adolescent, and you're starting to do some wild things. You're starting to feel a little more comfortable, a little more confident. By the time you get to the Meseta, you feel like you're in adulthood. And you're starting to venture out on your own a little bit more. And for me, it was in León. I ended up meeting three Italians that had started there. And we ended up walking a good, maybe 7 days together, where I felt I was almost in this parental role where I was help guiding them
on interesting.
Their Camino journey. It's not that I was forcing, you know, they would kind of ask me like, hey, you know, should we get up early?
Mentorship on them.
Exactly. And
sure. I know what you mean.
And then the last couple of days, this sounds awful, but I was thinking so much about the end, and I think maybe that's the way I'll view the end of my life someday.
Right. Yeah. Death in a way, right?
It's a little dark, but it was
not really. Perhaps not. That's not the direction, you know. Like, it almost gives death a brighter feel.
Yeah. It's just the end of a journey, and I didn't know how to really process it. And for me, the time slowed down so much on the Camino. Where days felt like weeks, and weeks felt like years, and, you know, an entire, you know, 30 plus day journey feels like a lifetime.
Right.
So, I completely get what you're saying. It is funny, this theme of the phases of the Camino is so apparent.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a reason. I mean, it's not the I'm sure people who've walked, there's no need to explain to this, but I mean, at the end of the day, it is a pilgrimage, and that's not to say that it's something that's uniquely Catholic, but a big part of Camino was, for example, people who walked on it from the past all were carrying something with them. And some of them were prisoners, you know, sent from my Lithuanian friends were talking about how they were sending people to grab the shells in Galicia from Lithuania during the Middle Ages. And they have to fetch it and come back and be like, guys, I'm done. And they say, okay, you're now good to go. The difference is they had to walk the whole thing back.
Yeah.
We didn't. But so those guys did that. And there's that kind of energy just, you know, it seeped into that place for, was it millions of years? Or am I a little bit off here?
A little bit off.
Thousands of years. It goes back to
like the 13th century, 14th right. century.
700 years or so. They're definitely, you know, it's and that has influenced the way the Camino looks today, right? All these different people, they impacted, the Camino itself impacted this place, this at least with Camino Francesc, it's this one line of path and all the life around it and all the stories around it and all these tales and all these different traditions and different towns stuff has been going on for all these years. So it did peter out, I guess, historically at one point, but then it came back again, for example, in the 80s or something. But all throughout these times, it existed. It was, it's deeply, I don't know, profound, you know, in the way that, for example, other hikes may not be, or other walks for the same distance and the same terrain may not have that kind of quality to it. So yeah, I don't know, you go there thinking about that, it puts you in a certain state, and it gives you the space to think about things you never did before, because you've put yourself in that kind of you know, environment, right? And where that's, you know, people tell each other things on the Camino that are very personal too, and you bond with people in ways that you necessarily may not at your workplace, for example. So yeah, absolutely, it's a deeply profound experience, in one way or another. It may not be spiritual necessarily for some people, but it will be profound.
So let me wrap things up with this.
Sure.
You went on Camino, you walked to Muxía.
Yep.
There's a saying that the Camino actually begins once you reach Santiago de Compostela. Right. How's your Camino been since you've reached the city of Santiago de Compostela?
Well, that's interesting, because I was like, oh my God, I had all these revelations and I wrote all these things down. And I wrote all these things down, and I was like, I'm never going to forget this. And I go back to Barcelona. I'm not from Barcelona, but I've been living here for 5 years, four years, I think. And then I went straight back into how I was before, which is not necessarily bad, but it was something that I thought would give me an instant change. It felt like that at one point, you know, like, oh, I made it, like, oh, I don't know, like, this kind of state of, you know, like joy and it feels clean inside when you finish the Camino, like you feel like you're reborn almost. And that kind of went away very quickly. It lasted a little bit, but in a few days, a week or so, I was like in the same mindset I was before. So yeah, like, I don't know, I decided, I was like, okay, the Camino, I was like, I need to pursue music seriously, because that's what I love to do. And why am I alive if I'm not going to do something I love fully? You know, and it was a simple thought that really hit me there. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go back to Barcelona, I'm going to do all this. And I didn't. And I, you know, started working again and, you know, did the same things I did before. And then months went by, and then slowly I started thinking about it again, because I had forgotten it very quickly. It stayed with me, some of the memories, but all the learnings and stuff went away. And it started to come back to me slowly, slowly, slowly. It was like, I don't know. You know how, since you're in America, I'll make an Adderall reference. Adderall has extended release and instant release, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure all Americans would know, Europeans would have no idea what I'm talking about. But it wasn't this instant effect. It was a long-term effect. And it slowly, slowly came back to me. And only, I don't know, I started to work on myself a lot last year. And then it culminated in this year, really sort of finally deciding to put a lot of time, at least my mind and effort into music. So I just spent the last month building up my music studio and sort of kind of finished today, just before this interview. So it kind of all happened, basically kind of just took time to settle in and actualize. So that's something that made me think that this Camino thing, you know, it starts after the whole thing, you the whole experience of Camino, it's something that you find, you know, you walk in and you're like, oh, this is like life, and life is like Camino, right? And now I'm definitely feeling like, okay, I can do this. I could do what I want to do in life. I'm going to take it a step by step, and I'm going to reach there, but I have to take these steps, and it's going to be tough. You know, those kind of immediate learnings from the Camino has kind of been transferred to how I live right now as well.
So to close things off, I've been asking all of my guests this lately, if you could pick a song that'd be the Ooh. Soundtrack for your Camino, what would it be?
Yeah, it'd be two. In My Heart by Moby, the one I mentioned earlier, and Africa by Toto. Just because that song was, I don't know why, it just sort of at one point became the track that we were playing. And it definitely, I don't know, that tan 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 tan, I hear that and now I feel the Camino again.
So. There's a lot of pilgrims out there that share that same sentiment. Thank you so much, Luca. Okay. It's been great catching up with you, my friend.
Yeah, likewise.
Definitely, I hope to see you out there again. And as always, buen camino.
Absolutely.
I hear the drums echoing tonight. And she hears only whispers of some quiet conversation. Flight.